Colossians chapter 1, verses 12 through 19. Let's read those verses. Colossians 1, 12 to 19. Giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins. Who is the image of the invisible God and the firstborn of every creature? For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And he is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. For it pleased the Father that in him should all fullness dwell. And we notice here, verse 17, he is before all things, and by him all things consist. Now I realize that the home is not mentioned here, but all things were created by God. All things. He is the head of all things, verse 18 says. And this certainly extends to our homes. Like the heart inside our chest this morning that's beating away there with life, so God is at the core of our physical being, of our homes, of our souls. If the Christian dies if his heart is removed. Our physical body dies if our heart stops, but a Christian dies if God is removed from his life. The Christian home will die if God slips away, a God consciousness and a God focus slips out of our lives, out of our homes. God needs to be central in our lives, not off in a corner. And sometimes this happens where he gets relegated to a corner. We want him there, but he's not really to be in the nerve center because we have some other things that are there in the nerve center that are more important. And it pushes him out. A Christian home cannot live like that. What are the characteristics of home communication, of a home communication network with God at the center? So, okay, we have a home, and it's centered around God, and God is the head of the home, and he's in the home, and by him all things in the home consist. How's a home operate? What does it look like? It is filled with love, number one. It is filled with love. We love him because he first loved us. And that's fitting that we start there. It is, you think about our Christian lives. Think about where we are with Christ this morning. And it's because of his love. So a Christian home, the first characteristic of a Christian home with God at the center is a home that's filled with love. There is forgiveness extended and received because we have received it as we have been forgiven by God through the blood of Jesus Christ. We've been forgiven and released. So also in a Christian home, there's forgiveness extended freely. I'm sorry should be a normal in a Christian home. From all parties, not just the child to the parent. I'm sorry, Father, for... Yes, we need that. But sometimes we as parents need to go to our children and say, I'm sorry. And mean it. A home with God at the center is a home that is a shelter from the storms of life. Children suffer when storms are in the home. And I understand that there's a difference between a man-caused storm and a God-caused storm. Sometimes, you know, God brings things into our home sometimes that is very difficult, and it can be stormy. But as children see their parents relate to that with a God consciousness and a God awareness, that God brought this in, we don't know why, but God brought it. And children find rest in that, even though It is a difficult time. But you know, sometimes because of man's selfishness, parents' selfishness, there can be storms come into our homes. And that's when children suffer. Everyone suffers. Another characteristic of a home with God at the center is an understanding and a focus on God being a holy God. We didn't talk much. I thought about it. We didn't talk a lot about the holiness of God. But somehow, as I thought about our homes, how can we have a godly home without a concern about the holiness of God? So crucial. There's structure in a godly home because God is a holy God. And structure is one of these things that can go, it can be underdone, it can be overdone. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Is sometimes there's what we call authoritarian structures and authoritative structures. And those words are very, very similar, but they mean two different things. An authoritarian home structure is demanding strict obedience, being rigid and dictatorial. Well, what happens? Okay, you think about it in a natural sense, in a country that's ruled by a dictator. Does a dictator have close relationship with these subjects? No, he doesn't. He's just, this is the way it is. Strict and demanding obedience. And so we can swing into that or swerve into that if we're not careful, the authoritarian structure. Or we can be authoritative. And this is where we need, well, the other extreme is passive. You know, just everyone, there is no authority. There is no structure. But where we need to find ourselves this morning is the authoritative, where we show confidence in or the expectation of being obeyed. In other words, a parent or mother, a father, stands on a principle and there's an expectation that it's going to be obeyed. It's where everyone is respectful, but a parent is confident and firm, but not a dictator. And love is what filters through that and flavors that. But God is a holy God. And in our teaching programs, we need to understand, we need to teach clearly that there's black and white. And yes, I know there's grays. You understand what I mean? Grays. There's things that, well, should we go this way or that way on this issue? And finally, we need wrong is wrong and right is right. To a holy God, we know that. We read the Old Testament. It's so important that it was clear. There was lines. And we live in a world of gray. We live in a world of pastels and shades of gray. But we need homes where God is at the center need to be. There's things that are black and white. There's things that are always wrong, and there's things that are always right. That brings structure and consistency to a home. God is a holy God. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Home is where purity and innocence must be protected at all costs. It's so important. And so it's a place where so quickly this can get lost. Much more could be said on that. But purity, parents, purity and innocence must be protected. And however your home operates and whatever your schedules are and bathroom use and bedroom use and all that, it must be protected. So important. Because God is a holy God. Because there is black and white and right and wrong, next point under God at the center of a home, parents instill those truths with discipline. The Bible way of discipline works and cannot be approved upon. We need those reminders. Proverbs 19:18 says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope. Let not thy soul spare for his crying." And we must not be ashamed or half-hearted in standing for God's way. It doesn't grow old. It cannot be improved upon. God give you courage, parents, to keep on and not give up. Hebrews, I was going to let this point go, but I think I'll remind us of this too. In relation to the chastening, in relation to discipline, don't forget the verses in Hebrews 12, 5 through 8. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof are partakers any of you bastards and not sons? We don't want to raise bastards. But that's what's saying, if we don't chastise our children. Because we as Christians feel the chastening of the Lord sometimes. We do. Why? Because God hates us? No, it's because he loves us. And that same, and we feel, and it's when we feel, we don't always feel, as Christians, we don't always feel those chastening times, but sometimes we do. And when we feel that, we need to recognize that that is God showering his love upon us. And it comes over so beautifully in our homes. God give us strength to be faithful in this, that if we love, we chasten. If we choose not to chasten, that's not love when it's needed. Number two, as far as the second G, is grace. What is grace? How does grace relate to a home? Maybe this point is a little harder to get your minds around, but it shouldn't be. Grace is simply graciousness, especially the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life. I like that. That comes from Strong's, but that's profound. The divine influence upon the heart, it relates back to our former point on God, but the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life. And dictionary gives other definitions too: elegance, beauty, and smoothness of form or movement, politeness, generosity, and prayer at mealtimes. Prayer at mealtimes. Good definitions of grace. As the grace of God is appreciated and lived out in the life of the parents, this grace extends to the family. As parents, we're like conduits. We're channels of grace. But we have to receive it and understand it ourselves first before we can be a channel. Colossians 4:6 says, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how to answer every man. And there's two. When you think about salt, there's a preservation aspect and there's a flavor enhancement. So grace preserves our home, but grace also brings out the flavor. And as I thought about that, it's just we have a family, and there's flavors in the family. Isn't that beautiful? How some of our children have these characteristics, and another child has these characteristics, and all. And as grace, as a home finds its place, as parents feel the grace of God and extend it to their children, it brings out flavors, and also there's a preservation there. Be careful about shutting down communication, even if it gets loud. Be careful about shutting down communication if it gets loud. Our homes can get loud sometimes. We have a lot of people wanting to talk, and sometimes we have a tendency to just shut it down. Or sometimes there's an attitude expressed, you're kind of expecting what's going to come. Shut it down. Be careful with that. Because it's when these attitudes are expressed that we really learn and see the heart of the child. And we know what to discipline if it's something wrong coming out. We learn, we can see what to bless when it's something good coming out. And so we can squash all that, and we don't, and so children grow up learning to control everything, control their feelings, which they need to some extent, I understand, but sometimes we have to, those attitudes and feelings will come out. And they may come out later on in a way that we can't handle because bitterness has set in. And I think grace is the underlying concept that helps us to flow. It gives us, as parents, politeness, dignified, decent behavior, a capacity to tolerate, to accommodate, and to forgive. Moving on to the third G. I think I have that right. Yeah, third G is great. It's gentleness. Gentleness. Galatians 5:22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Strong's would say that gentleness means useful. Useful excellence. That shifted my, I was just thinking of someone being really gentle and just having a soft touch. And I think that's true. But there's also, it's a gentleness that's applied. A gentleness that infiltrates our system, if you understand what I mean. 2 Corinthians 10:1 says, "Now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am base among you, but being absent and bold toward you." That helped me understand this gentleness a little bit better. A suitableness, equity, mildness. But there's a... Okay, what I'm trying to say is, a moderation. Being mild and kind in nature and matter. Being moderate. In other words, you still, gentleness does not mean that you let things slide that should be taken care of. But it's something, it's a characteristic that moderates it. It's very closely connected with grace, and I had struggled a little bit to disconnect the two sometimes. But how can we communicate gentleness in a godly home? Just a couple thoughts on this. Gentleness should define home life. I think this is an attitude. It is one of the fruits of the Spirit. We need to remember that. It should define home life. Picture this morning a shepherd leading the sheep. So I thought about gentleness. You think Psalm 23, you run it through your mind. You get a picture of that, of the words that are used in Psalm 23. Maybe we should just recite it by memory. Some of you are sleepy. But it's as we think about the tranquility. You know, gentleness is not boisterous. It's not filled with upheaval. It's not disciplining in anger and frustration. We can quickly get into that sometimes where we lose our gentleness and we just, time to take care of this thing, and we get frustrated. But that's counterproductive. It does not. I think that's where this fruit of the Spirit comes in here. We need gentleness. We need to watch the tone of our voices as parents. Something that's always interesting to me, and I think about it when we get a new dog. Just relating to a dog in general. I like dogs. But in your tone of voice, I've done this. So I start talking to the dog, and I say, "Oh, you are such a terrible dog." And you say it in such a nice tone of voice, but you use the wrong words. The dog doesn't understand. You're telling him how terrible he is, but he just wags his tail. He's all happy. Or you can say, "You're such a nice dog," but you can use it in a rough tone of voice where the dog will cower and go away. And my point is, we don't realize sometimes the inflection in our tone of voice that we use speaks more than the actual words. You know, the dog doesn't know what you're saying, but he knows your tone of voice. And even children, even when they're very young, they might not They might not understand your voice at all because they can't, but they know your tone. They know a mother's songs that she sings or the little noises, and you know what I'm talking about. But those things are so wonderful and beautiful. But let's continue that as they get older. But watch your tone of voice. Point number four, 4G, the fourth G is gratitude. Gratitude. Maybe that's not what you were expecting, but it's in a season of Thanksgiving. This should not be the least. In fact, I wonder if it's the most important point of all. I have several passages here. Maybe I'll just read some of them. The Bible has so much to say about giving thanks. The word thanksgiving, I don't know. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 references here. We won't read all these verses, but Psalm 50, 14 and 15 says, offer unto God thanksgiving and pay thy vows unto the Most High and call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver thee and thou shalt glorify me. Deliverance there is linked to thanksgiving. Sing unto the Lord with thanksgiving. Sing praise upon the harp unto our God, who covereth the heaven with clouds, who prepareth rain for the earth, who maketh grass to grow upon the mountains. Their thanksgiving is something that's intertwined with praising the Lord. What are we doing when we're praising the Lord? Are we worried about this and this and all these little issues here and there? No, we're not. Our focus is there. Thanksgiving is so important. A verse from the New Testament. Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. You know, God can work through our thankfulness to supply our needs. Harry Ironside, an American preacher, said this, we would worry less if we praised more. Thanksgiving is the enemy of discontent and dissatisfaction. Thanksgiving is the enemy of discontent and dissatisfaction. That's just an interesting quote there from Harry Ironside. Is it too simplistic to say this morning that an atmosphere of thanksgiving in the home will solve most problems before they come? An atmosphere of thanksgiving will solve most problems before they come. If we are truly thankful for our spouse, will we be irritated when they bring up a perspective we missed? Both sides. Are we humble enough, husbands too, to say thank you for our wife's perspective? And wives, are you humble to agree that your husband's perspective is something that we missed? And if you're truly thankful for your spouse, I think you will be. I will. Number two, if we are truly thankful for our children, will we not respond in grace and truth instead of irritation and ridicule for their foibles and needs that get expressed in daily life? For their little, I use the word foibles, for their little embarrassing things that happen sometimes and make us feel like, didn't we teach them anything? But if we're truly thankful for them, will we not respond in grace and truth instead of irritation and ridicule? And third, under this point, if we are truly thankful for the children God so graciously has given us, will we not provide for them the structure and consistency that they need so much? If we're really thankful for them, will we not do everything it takes to usher them safely to that heavenly city, that heavenly goal? Because that's where all this is pointing to anyway. No means no, and it is enforced with biblical methods of discipline, not New Age concepts like sitting in a corner and staring at a white wall. And I came across this some time ago in a book that I was reading about how this is recommended with difficult children. You put them in a corner and stare at a white wall. And I just shake my head because that's not There is a place for making them quiet and reflect, but to me that's a New Age concept that's coming in to our circles. Teach boys to become men and girls to become ladies. Maybe you think that's a given. Teach boys to become men and girls to become ladies. That it's something, don't be like a megapode, remember? Things don't just happen normally. It takes training and line upon line and precept upon precept. And parents, like we said before, need to find their place in this. Fathers, we need to be strong but loving. Mothers, you need to be submissive and loving. The feminist culture that we have around us today and is becoming stronger and stronger destroys these concepts. It's like knocking the foundation right out of this. Strong but loving fathers and submissive loving mothers. And when these roles are reversed, the seedbed is laid for much confusion and perversion. And we see the results. We have weak fathers and strong mothers, domineering women and passive men. And this just upsets what God has designed. And it explains why there's a gender confusion in culture today. It's just simply a rejection of biblical truth and a rejection of God's way of communicating the faith, of communicating our children safely home. We're communicating for eternity. I just want to close. I'm at the end of the message, but I wasn't sure. The conclusion for the message was a struggle for me in a sense until I just went to Psalm 128. Open your Bibles. We're going to read that in closing, say very little comments about it. Hopefully the message is one that can encourage us all to reestablish a vision again of the important work that we as parents are called to do. Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways, for thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion, and thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, thou shalt see thy children's children in peace upon Israel. I said I wasn't going to make many comments there, but this can seem very idealistic. This can seem like, oh, it's just, you do the right thing, you do A plus, you know, and the whole picture comes together, and it's just a Norman Rockwell picture. Just a perfect picture. But you know, life isn't like that, and our homes can go through upheaval and turmoil. But parents that are faithful to the Lord are someday, maybe not in this life, but there's going to be peace in Zion. There's going to be peace at the Father's house. And that's what we're building for. We're communicating for eternity. May God help us to be faithful. We'll have a kneeling prayer and then we'll have a song. Song leader can lead us in a song, and one of the ministry can close the service. Brother Steve, let's kneel for prayer.